Welcome to the Run for God Run Club, where you will find God in a runner's space.
Welcome to the Run for God Run Club. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Well, let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. You know, we all love running and or walking for some, but did you know that running is not always the answer when things don't go your way? Well, we're going to discuss that. And although I don't know hardly anything about firefighter training, it's hard to say, I'm going to share how it's a lot like running. And back. Joining me once again is Run for God founder Mitchell, an all-around nice guy, Mitchell Hollis.
How's your week been, Dean?
Oh, great. You know, it's
Are you getting any sleep?
I'm really not. I've been getting up at 4 o'clock every morning.
Have you really?
Yes, I have.
Because you don't want to watch the replay.
No, I want to.
You want to watch the live of it. So we're talking about the Olympics, obviously.
That's right.
When this comes out, I guess the Olympics are over, aren't they?
That's right. Yeah, it will be. Yep. But, and I just haven't, paid attention. I've watched a little bit more than the track and field stuff, but mostly I just keep watching the track and field stuff. So yeah, when it's 4 o'clock in the morning too, I don't have any excuse. I mean, it's like, it's nice because I'm not normally up that time. So I don't feel like I'm wasting my time watching it. You know what I mean? So
just getting less sleep.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I haven't watched a whole lot. I've went back and watched several things, which we'll talk about in a minute, where people have said, "Did you see this?"
Yeah,
and then I'll go watch that. I'll pull it up on YouTube and watch it. But I haven't watched hardly,
not too much,
hardly any at all live.
Yeah,
I've watched some of the replays at night because, you know, they give the commentary and stuff, which I like. It's kind of like watching the Tour de France live. Is really kind of boring.
Yeah,
but if you watch the prime time where they've edited and put all the stories in, it makes it a little better. More digestible.
It is better. It is better at night for sure. Because I've watched a couple of them in the morning, and then watched it again at night or in the afternoon. The track and field feed, right?
Yeah.
And then watched the overall feed. And there's two different announcers, and it's fun to listen to the difference.
Well,
between,
I mean, it's
kind of
like this podcast. I mean, stories are great. It's nice to know the backstory and the history, and you know where these people came from. And
that's the cool thing about the track and field stuff, though, is that there you get those stories there too.
Really?
So you get those stories from one set of announcers, and then the evening, if you watch it again, then you get a different. It's some of it's the same stories, and some of it's a little bit different, but it's a little bit different take even on the same story.
So do they have the? Because I haven't watched any in the mornings, really. You know, like in the evenings, if let's just say they're let's say they're talking about Sha'Carri. You know, they'll cut away to like a video that they've done in the past of, you know.
No, they don't
like,
do that.
They don't do that in the morning. Okay.
No.
So they only do that in the evenings.
That's right.
In prime time.
Yep.
I got you.
Yep.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. But it's good stuff. Hey, next week's podcast is going to be different, right?
Yep, it sure is.
It's going to be something we've never done.
Never
this
done
is
before.
Number 230. This is our podcast number 230. And we've done more than that because we've done some bonus episodes and things. So out of 240 episodes, we're going to do something for the first time next
week. We have a very famous guest.
We do. Very famous.
Yep.
Yep.
So stay tuned.
We've had Alan Webb, and we've had some pretty famous
Dean
people.
Dean Karnassus.
We've had some pretty famous people, but I don't know that we've had any
Nothing
as famous
to this
as next
level.
Week's.
Nothing That's to right. this level.
So,
so stay tuned.
Make sure you do. That's right. All right. Our post of the week is from June Westfall Jennings. She said, "A tough few weeks. Dad's passing, followed by two very sick dogs, has left me with some major brain fog. Thank God my beagles are now okay. A light 3 miles, followed by 1 mile walk today. Please pray for peace and rest." And we definitely do pray for peace and rest. You know, I couldn't pass this one up because it kind of goes along with this week's story so well.
Yeah.
You know, June, she's just a joy.
Sure.
She's such a fun lady. But it always hurts to see somebody that you like that. And you just can feel it in her words, you know, that she's hurting. And, that's always tough. And sometimes when you are in a brain fog, when things are going crazy, sometimes going out for a run kind of clears a little bit of that fog away.
It does.
Or at least it does for me. Because I think what happens is your brain is kind of working overtime. And your brain just all it wants to do is focus on that one little thing, mm-hmm. whatever it is. And you go out and you run. And even if it's something that's really heavy on your mind, a lot of times when you go run, even if it's just for a few minutes mm-hmm. of that run, mm-hmm. somehow, some way, running will take it away for just a small period of time. And it just, I don't know, makes me feel better.
And that's the cool thing about it. I would love to have somebody on here at some point who knows the science behind this because, you know, I've always said fatigue and exhaustion from the brain is worse than physical.
100% agree. Yep.
And you can, because I'm not a meeting person. You get much past an hour and I start to do what June describes as brain fog. I mean, it's just like stuff starts getting cloudy. And I've had those days where I have those meetings one after another. And at the end of the day, I'm just completely wiped out, exhausted from not doing anything physical. And how is it that you go do something physical after that and all your energy's back?
Yeah.
Isn't that weird how that, I would love to know the science. I'm sure I know there's science behind that, but we need to get some neurosurgeon or doctor on here that could explain that.
Well, I don't, for me though, when I do that, if I do have one of those really mind intensive days and then I go for a run, a lot of times the first mile or two are a little rough.
Yeah.
Like you can feel the physical fatigue manifesting itself.
Because it's real. It kind of loosens up. It really is. It's a mental thing that produces a physical thing.
Yeah.
And a physical thing that does away with a mental thing. So
it's really interesting.
It is. Yeah. Tells you how much is, I mean, we talk about it all the time about how much of what we do is in our head. Well, that's a prime example. That is quite literally all in our head.
It proves it.
And it wipes us out.
Yeah. That's crazy. Trivia question. Question from last week was, they dropped three sports from the Olympics this year, baseball, softball, and karate. There were two new Olympic sports this year. What were they? Well, when I asked this question, I thought I knew what the two sports were, and then I realized one of those sports was really just a new event underneath a different heading. Hmm. So the one new sport is breaking, or we call it breakdancing. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched any of that. I haven't even seen that it's on. I haven't even seen a graphic that says it's on. I have no interest in watching that. I don't think that should be an Olympic sport. That's just my two cents. Now, if you think it should be, that's great. That's fantastic.
You know who they should have brought back to kind of launch that sport?
What's that?
Like bring Kevin Bacon back and the whole Footloose. That would have been a great way to kind of release that sport. It would have got a lot more people on board.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. The other sport was a canoeing. Mm-hmm. In the canoeing category, kayak cross. This is the craziest sport. Debbie and I have been watching it. Mm-hmm. This is great. So they take these people and they put them on it's like a slalom course for, for canoe or kayak, mm-hmm. In some rapids. And they drop four boats off of a platform, 12 and a half feet off of this platform into the water all at the same time. And they race. It's great fun.
Why am I thinking years and years ago that used to be an Olympic sport? Not where they dropped them necessarily, but that it was a slalom course in the rapids of a river.
Now, they do that. They've been doing that for years.
Okay. What's that called?
That's just a single thing where you do it based on time, and they race based on time. In this case, you got all four boats in the water at the same time.
Oh, so they're racing each other the same time.
Yes.
And contact.
Yes. Oh, big time contact. Boats are bumping into each other, and they'll come into one of the slalom things, and, mm-hmm. and it's different than on the regular events. What happens is you can't touch the guides that you have to go between, but on this one you can. The guides are like a foam rubber kind of thing, mm-hmm. and they can just knock them out of the way. And so you have these people trying to get around one of those standards, and another boat will come in and just wham, just really? Knock them out of the way and get around them. I haven't watched that. It's pretty good. It's pretty good stuff. So anyway, it's fun. If you haven't seen it, you ought to go check it out. If you can't check it out this year, check it out next Olympics. You know, you'd think this would be an easy question to answer. What are the new Olympic sports? Mm-hmm. But I got a lot of stuff that wasn't good when I did that. So surfing, skateboarding, and climbing were new in the last Olympics, and they're still calling them new in this Olympics. But to me, that was new in the last Olympics, so they're not new in this Olympics. But anyway, the whole breaking thing it's one of those judge sports, mm-hmm. you know? And I don't know if you saw, we just had this situation in gymnastics where the American was sixth, and all of a sudden there was some kind of, that one of the American coaches went over and talked to the judges, and the next thing you knew, they moved that girl up to third, and she bumped somebody off the podium that was about to get on the podium, literally. And
That's very subjective.
That's the problem with judge sports. Yeah. Man, I just love, you know, we know who won the 1500 meters. Right. There's no question about it. And even though Josh Kerr and Jared Neguse were an inch apart, we know mm-hmm. which one came first. Mm-hmm. And that's what I like about the...
Did you see, I noticed you've got the mixed team relay on here for triathlon. Did you see that the margin of victory in the mixed team relay was the same margin of victory that was in the exact same as the 100 meter.
Was it really?
Yeah. 0.005 or something like that. It was the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, as much as I love triathlon and as much as I love the mixed team relay, I mean, to see Taylor Nib out there, she grew up racing. I mean, she was a few years older than Lane, but I watched her growing up racing. The 1500, I felt proud to be an American after that, because I know Cole Hawker, he's up there in the running, but when that race started, it appeared none of the announcers were talking about him. He was just way back there. And then I heard an interview with Cole Hawker. He said he knew that, is it Jared Neguse?
Yes.
Jared.
Or Jared.
Jared. He could tell that Jared and Josh were focused on each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then Engelbrightson, it drove me nuts how the only thing he was focused on, what was he focused on?
Himself.
The screen.
Well.
He was watching the screen the whole way, the last 100 meters. And I love the memes that we've seen on it. This is kind of crude, but you know what I'm talking about when I say this. But I saw one that was a picture of Jakob Ingebrigtsen saying, "You can't beat me." And then Josh Kerr and Jared Neguse are saying, "Yes, we can." And then Cole Hawker's off to the side saying, "Hold my beer." Because, I mean, that's really, it was Josh Kerr, Jared Neguse, and Engelbrightson. It was their race, basically.
Yeah.
And then Cole Hawker just almost out of nowhere. Well, and maybe, I know he's, from what I heard, he's got a kick. That's what he's kind of known for.
I picked Cole Hawker to beat Jared Neguse.
But did you pick him 100 meters into the race?
Sure.
Really?
Yeah. No,
He seemed like he was. Now, there was chance.
I will confess that I thought if he won, it would be a slower race. That they would, you know, the race.
I remember you saying that.
Yeah. If the race was a 3:29 race or 3:30 race, I thought.
Because Engelbrightson took it out hot, didn't he?
Yeah. He went out too fast. That's what cost him.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a good race, though. It was fun to watch.
But it was the. It's almost like Hawker couldn't believe it himself.
Yeah.
I mean, when he came across that line, he was just like, "What just happened?"
Do you know when the last time was that we had two Americans in the top three in the 1500 meters?
I saw that somewhere, but I don't remember the number now.
1912.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's incredible. That's a really incredible thing.
Yeah. And then Jared Neguse, I mean, he seems just like a salt of the earth guy.
Yeah.
You know, Cole Hawker seems like a really nice guy. You know my thoughts on Engelbrightson.
Yeah.
It was fun to watch.
Yeah.
It was fun to watch. That was one of those where somebody texted me and said, "Did you just see?" And I was like, "Nope, I didn't, but I'll go watch it now."
Yeah.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, Dean, so we're back. So when this comes out, I'm clear to talk about this right now. But I've got a surprise. I'm going to start this off. This may be the headline of the podcast. You may want to use this as the headline of the podcast. I've been lying to my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty major.
Mm-hmm.
So tonight, yesterday was our 25th wedding anniversary. And so back on my 30th birthday, which was 16 years ago, she threw me a surprise birthday party. I've never lived it down. So tonight, as we're recording this, we're going to go to dinner for our anniversary. And then when we come home, we're going to have 50 or so friends and family that are going to be here at the house that are, she's not going to know they're here when we walk through the door. And I'm doing a surprise vow renewal ceremony. And this has been the hardest thing to keep this a secret because I had to start planning like a month ago.
Yeah.
And
it's been longer than a month.
Has it? Yeah, it's been a long time.
It's been a couple of months. Yeah.
Yeah. But just a few weeks ago, and she may be hearing this for the first time when she listens to this, I forgot a family member that I didn't invite.
Ooh.
And so I sent them a text and I said, do y'all have time for a surprise event on August the 9th? And I was sitting at dinner that night. It wasn't a family. It was a friend. I was sitting at dinner that night. Holly's sitting right next to me. The boys are at the table. And this person texts me back and said, yes, we'll be here. You've piqued my interest. Well, I picked my phone up. And I look at, have I told you this yet?
Mm-mm.
I pick my phone up and I look at the text and it's to Melanie and Elihi and Holly. And I mean, my heart sank.
Oh, no.
And she hadn't said anything about it yet. She hadn't said, what's this surprise thing? So I immediately stood up from the table and I said, I got something to do out in the garage. And I walked out in the garage because I didn't want her to ask me because I was like, I wasn't prepared.
Yeah.
I didn't have my life figured out at this point. So I go out down in the woods where I knew she couldn't hear me because we were sitting outside for dinner. And I called this lady, Melanie. And I said, we've got to come up with a lie. You know, because she's about to ask me at any minute tonight, what's this surprise thing on August the 9th? So we come up with this plan, and so Melanie replied. Why I texted to the three of them, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea why Holly was included on this text. So Melanie replied back, and she said, oh, are you talking about the surprise birthday party for Tom Miner, which is an attorney here in town?
Yeah.
And I responded, yes, I was supposed to get a head count for who might be coming. And she said, oh, yeah, I have that on my calendar. It's already taken care of. And so Holly never asked me about it. And I went so far as right now on my calendar, because Holly and I can see each other's calendars.
Yeah.
At 12:30 today, it shows surprise birthday party for Tom Miner.
So you're going to have to disappear for a little while.
So I'm going to go down to the Dalton Country Club and sit for like 20 minutes. Because I have a feeling she got suspicious of something there.
So she's going to be looking at the whole, where's your iPhone thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, she's probably not. This is me being paranoid.
Right. Yeah.
But I'm going to go down there and sit for like 20 minutes today at 12:30. And so it's, Lying is hard.
Yeah. I don't know how people do it.
I don't either. I mean, I'm exhausted from a month of this. Just her asking me questions like she thinks my youngest son, he's going to Florida. Well, she thinks that he's leaving before the party. Well, he's not. So now I've got my kids in on it. Lying. It's just so
stressful.
I'm
going
to come clean tonight.
Yeah. Oh, good.
But yeah, I just, you know, it's, you don't see that done anymore. Vow renewal. I don't know. 25 years. That's
awesome.
Pretty cool.
Good stuff. Yeah. So, well, congratulations.
So,
by the way,
I feel better that I've confessed to everybody listening that I have lied to my wife, and I will make up for it tonight.
Yeah.
I promise.
Well, good. Good. Well, how about a story for this week? We've got another story from Rhonda Williams, and you know, we talked about just a few minutes ago about how running can make us feel a little bit better if we go for a run. But Rhonda argues that it's not always a good thing to go for a run, and she explains that in this story called Running Isn't Always the Answer. I love running. I love to hit the pavement and feel the breeze on my face. I enjoy listening to the sound of my footsteps, the birds chirping and the occasional squirrel scurrying up a tree. I talk with God and I feel His presence with me, which brings peace and contentment. I take in the beauty of the world around me and marvel at what He has created. I feel better after a run, calmer, more centered, and ready to tackle my day. Running keeps me healthy physically, mentally, and spiritually, so my first thought when I'm feeling stress is to put on my favorite running shoes and head out the door. It helps me to quiet the chaos whirling around in my head and focus on the problem. However, sometimes running isn't the answer. Sometimes I just need to sit at the feet of Jesus, still and quiet. Sometimes pouring out my heart to Him on my knees and having a good cry is a better choice than running. I went to graduate school to be able to work in a field that is a passion of mine. I poured a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into that program, not to mention money. My graduation day was one of the best days of my life, and I was excited about the future, a new future. After graduation, I sent out a resume after resume and made phone call after phone call. And finally, 2 years after I finished school, I landed my dream job. I threw myself into putting my education to work and also into getting to know my coworkers. I was settling in, and things were going well. Just a year later, I was laid off along with 400 other employees. Reduction in workforce, the HR manager said. I had been RIF'd. At that time, work and energy just to get the rug. All that time, work, and energy just to get the rug pulled out under my feet. I was devastated. I remember it was a Thursday, the last day of the first quarter. I should have seen it coming since others had already been laid off. I guess I was just naive. I was in shock the rest of the day, and I went through the stages of grief over the next few weeks. Any major loss can trigger the stages of grief, not just the loss of a loved one. People will grieve the loss of a marriage, a job, an amputation of a limb. I grieved the loss of my dream job. 2 days later, I was signed up to run a very hilly, difficult half marathon. By race day, I was in the anger stage, and I thought about not going. However, it was a special year for this race with jackets instead of shirts and lots of celebrating, and I didn't want to miss it. I thought what I needed was just to exert myself physically. A hard run and I'll feel better, I told myself. So I went, and I regret it. The anger caused me to behave in a way that was sinful. I started to say inappropriate or in a way that wasn't me, but I need to call it what it was, sin. Had my granny been there, she would have said, "You're being ugly," and then probably would have chased me with a switch. Everyone who grew up in the South knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Amen.
I spent the first few days after the race apologizing and thanking my friends for loving me when I wasn't very lovable. It was a very humbling experience. They were all forgiving and kind, and the memory brings tears to my eyes when I think about their compassion. I was distracted during the race and ran the first few miles too fast. All I could think about was losing a job I had worked so hard to get. I was very confused and hurt. I had felt God with me all during graduate school and was so sure this job was where He wanted me to be. So why? Why, God? I argued with Him and poured my heart out to Him, and by mile nine, I was exhausted and my knees were hurting. I had not been paying attention to my form or pace and was suffering for it. The most difficult parts of the race were behind me at this point, but I still had four painful miles to go. I burst into tears. Finally, I shed the tears I needed to shed, breaking out of the anger stage and into the depression stage. However, instead of crying privately at home, I was on a country road with 1,800 other runners. I was very grateful that I was wearing a hat and sunglasses to hide behind. I kept running, although a little slower and with more walk breaks. Every step felt like a monumental effort. Crossing the finish line was more relief than victory. I didn't even put the medal around my neck. I just held it in my hand. All I wanted to do was to get in the car and go home, take a shower, and collapse on my bed. All I wanted was to confess my sin and let Jesus minister to me in the privacy of my bedroom. I realized that a run was not the answer, not this time. Instead, I needed private time with my Lord and Savior. I needed to sit at His feet and be still and know.
It's a powerful story, Rhonda.
We've all been there. Mm-hmm. I know you and I have. Mm-hmm. Just the anger at stuff. I went through a similar thing. My job is different. It wasn't a job I had for a year. It was a job I had 25 years. Mm-hmm. For 24 consecutive years, I had above average performance reviews. Mm-hmm. Every single year. Mm-hmm. It was always good. I was always told I was doing a great job. I haven't shared this part of this story with just a few people. But I remember we had this director that came into our division who decided he just didn't like me. And I don't know why. I'm going to explain to you maybe why. I don't know if this is the answer or not. But my boss was trying to help with this situation. My boss reported to him. Mm-hmm. And he said, why don't you schedule a meeting and sit down with him and just, you know, if he'd just take the time to get to know you, he'd have to. You know, he would have to appreciate you. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, that's good. I'll do that. So I schedule this meeting and I sit down with him. And this guy, I couldn't believe that somebody told me what he told me. This is what he told me. And even now when I say it, I can't believe somebody told me this at work. He said, I don't like people who are runners because runners are very selfish people. Mm. That's why they spend so much time running. He said, now maybe you can overcome that, but I doubt it.
Wow.
And I thought, I was just dumbfounded. I was ready for any response he had, any problem he had. I was ready for every answer in the world. I wasn't ready for that one. Hmm. It's like he just attacked what I do, mm-hmm. you know, in a way it was very personal. And so I understand the anger. You talk about angry. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, was I angry! And to this day,
I've never heard that part of the story.
Yeah, yeah. And I've never seen this guy again. Hmm. After I left the company, but you know, eventually, he wanted to make my life miserable and make me quit. And eventually,
he was just putting you into a stereotype.
That's exactly. Basically. Yeah. So at least when you're downsizing, you can understand a little bit about why they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
But it's hard though when you feel like God has you where He wants you.
Yeah.
But anyway, I've never felt more treated more unfairly in my life than I was that day. And
But looking back, would you change it?
I wouldn't. I wouldn't change it. That's my point.
That's the cool thing about God.
Yes. That's where I was getting to. You know, the devil was all up in my head. And for a solid month,
yeah.
I was miserable.
Yeah.
I didn't tell anybody I was miserable. It didn't look like I was miserable to anybody on the outside. But when my wife left to go to work and I was sitting at home, mm-hmm. when I wasn't on my bike or running, yeah. I was miserable.
Yeah.
it got pretty bad. But now I look back on it and I go, God had a plan.
Yeah, I mean, that's why it's good to look back. We've talked about this before. You know, I've went through some pretty horrible stuff, you know, at the end of my former career. And I look back now and I wouldn't change it for the world. I thank God for it. But in the moment, it was, you know, you just want to get revenge and you're just vengeful and mad and, you know, going through all the stages of grief that Rhonda talks about. But God works all things.
Yeah.
Not the things that we're proud of. He works all things for the good of those who love him. And I loved him. I can't completely say I trusted him at the time. But my lack of trust in him bringing me through it in spite of me makes my faith even stronger now because I'm able to look back on that.
And that's right.
Now, the next thing that comes up, does it make me 100% strong for the next thing? No. But I hope I'm a few percentage more. I mean, that's the goal, right?
That's right.
To go through all these things so that we can get to the point to where we're like Paul and we're in prison and whatever our prison is metaphorically and say, I rejoice.
Yeah.
I'm not there yet.
No, but you're better than
me. But my hope is that I'm more there today than I was when I came to Christ at 19.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of like something I was going to say tonight at this vow renewal. You know, it's Christ modeled marriage for us in the way that he loves his church. You know, we all like to read that verse. I've got it written down here in Ephesians. Wives, submit yourselves to your husband. We love to read that, don't we, guys?
Yeah, but.
But three verses later, what does it say? Love your wives. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Well, we would be okay stopping at husbands, love your wives. Because we can do that. But as Christ loved the church. But what's the goal? He sets a bar we can never reach this side of glory. And we can never reach in our own strength.
Mm-hmm.
But the goal is, do I love my wife more now than 25 years ago? I hope so. Mm-hmm. And I hope it's a different love.
For sure.
You know, it was honeymoon back then. And my hope is it's more agape today. It looks different. Kudos to Rhonda for taking the time to look back on this and reflect on it and seeing herself that she's better today because of that, not worse off because of it.
Well, and I'll say this. I mentioned that I spent a month really angry for a month. She only spent, a couple of days, it looks like, a few days. She did good.
Well, she said a few weeks.
She did.
Somewhere in the story, she said a few weeks. But yeah, I mean,
I think she did a good job. In hindsight, when you recognize it and just acknowledging it.
I think that's where maturity in our faith comes in is
it does.
We recognize it. Doesn't make it easier, but we recognize what's happening and we recognize that God is stretching us and pulling us and molding us. That's not an easy process. Metamorphosis is never easy. But it's necessary.
Yep. Psalm 46:10, he says, be still and know that I am God.
Find time to do nothing.
Yeah.
It's what we talk about all the time. We have a hard time doing that.
Well, and in particular, when things go wrong, which is what we're talking about here, what do we want to do? We have to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
We have to fix it, and we have to fix it now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the idea of being still when something's gone wrong, just in worldly thoughts and ideas, makes no sense whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is, as soon as something goes wrong, my attitude is, I got to fix this.
Right.
And sometimes we can't do that. Yeah. I was listening to a guy recently. It was a podcast of a guy talking. He spent a lot of time in war zones, in conflict areas. He called them conflict zones. And he talked about putting God first in all the things that that he did. And I think that, and these were very tense situations, I think be still and know that I am God is not necessarily, and I'll talk about that here in a minute, but it's not necessarily be still physically.
Mm-hmm.
But he does want us to take time to focus on him. And that's the whole idea.
Right. But I think the posture of being still, especially in our mm-hmm. society today, is if we're not still, and even when we are still so many times, we've got so many inputs. We've got a phone, we've got earbuds in, we've got, you know, all these things going on around us. And we're forcing God to compete.
Yeah.
And maybe that's not the right way to say that, but we're allowing other things to compete with God. I shouldn't say we're asking God to compete. We're allowing other things to rise to the level of our time with God.
Yeah.
And for me, I have to come and sit in this chair, and I have to close my computer, and I have to put these iPods away from me, and I have to put my phone away from me so that I can open this book up and focus on God. Because yeah. I know these things are my distractions.
Yeah, yeah.
So for me, it is physically being still. But for others, like a lot of people pray when they run. I can't do that. I can do it when I walk, like if I'm walking. But running, some people say that's their connection. That is their time with God. And I get it. It's just not mine.
Yeah.
Mine has to be physically still.
Yeah. Some of my most powerful spiritual moments have been out on a run. Mm-hmm. There's something. And it depends on the day, and it depends on a lot of different things. But man, I'm astounded sometimes by how powerful it can be.
Now, I've had driving down the road, mm-hmm. if I'll turn the radio off.
Yeah.
That's good time for me too.
See, that's a lot like running.
Yeah.
Right? You're doing something, but it's something that your sure. body just does.
Right.
And you don't have to pay attention to it.
Just white noise.
Yeah. Where you can focus on. Yeah. Exodus 14:14. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. The notes in my Bible say the people were hostile and despairing, but Moses encouraged them to watch the wonderful way God would rescue them. Moses had a positive attitude. How appropriate for this story.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, we feel this need to do something, but I think we can kind of misinterpret this a little bit, because what does God say? Just I think it's the verse right after it. He says, you know, why do you cry out to me? Tell the sons of Israel to go forward. He's telling them to take action.
Yeah.
Again, the idea is to be connected to God. That's what he's saying, is be connected to me, not necessarily be physically still.
Mm-hmm. This is the one time in the Bible where I feel like it's God saying, quit praying.
Yeah.
Stop praying. I've told you what to do. Now do it. Because praying in this scenario was kind of stalling.
Right.
Right? You know,
right.
God, you've told me to walk into this water, but it's water. And there's an army coming after us from behind. This is a no-win, so let's pray. Well, God had already told him what to do.
Yep. Yeah, I think God's, in this case, God is saying, don't get in my way. You're getting in my way.
Sure.
Now get out of my way.
Yeah.
And I think that's powerful. Again, what Rhonda was saying in the story is being still for her meant not focusing on something like this race. It meant instead focusing on what God wants to tell her. Now, she mentioned being still in her quiet in her bedroom. Mm-hmm. That may be the best place for her. Could have been somewhere else.
Sure.
Mark 4:39 says, he got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, quiet, be still. Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?
Yeah, you know, it's easy to throw stones at the disciples there.
Yeah, it is.
But we do this every day.
Yeah.
Because what do we say, we talk about the disciples, you know, gosh, they They saw him heal people. They saw him raise people from the dead to heal sicknesses. And even in the Old Testament with the children of Israel coming out in Exodus, and we say, I mean, he was providing a pillar of fire at night and a cloud by day, and manna was raining down from the sky. How did they not have faith? But you and I look back on our own life.
Mm-hmm.
We can see all the places where mm-hmm. God just did miraculous things, and then we still have the audacity to say, God, where are you?
Yeah.
Where are you today?
Well, you know, the problem that I have with that analogy when people say that, you know, they had all this stuff is, well, okay, then if they had this stuff right in front of them and they didn't believe, then what you're saying is that you believe less than they did because you don't see it, right? Meaning you don't really believe then. If you say you have to see it to believe it, then you're Thomas. You know what I'm saying?
You've lost me there.
When you argue that, well, they had this stuff in front of them, so they should have been more faithful and done what God wanted them to do because they saw this stuff. Well, then if we're making that argument that right. they saw it, so they should believe, then what I'm saying is, well, then I haven't seen it. So does that mean I don't believe? If I don't take action, then I'm just as guilty as they are.
I think that's my point. We are just as guilty.
Yeah, I'm taking just that step further though, and saying that's like saying you don't believe when you say well they saw it and they didn't believe. It's the same thing as you saying, well, I just don't believe.
No, that's what I am saying. Yeah. it's you know, we like to throw rocks at them. We like to point fingers at them when we need to look at the three or four fingers point. Does your thumb actually point back? Three fingers pointing back at you. We like to make judgments of others when we all do this. We just need to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Because I mean, what do they say? Acknowledgement is the first step. Dealing with a problem, the first step is admitting you have a problem.
Yep.
And we all have this problem. And if you're saying you don't, you're wrong. What is known is wrong.
Well, the other thing about this too is that, and you've said this before, fear and faith
cannot coexist.
They cannot. You know, if you increase your fear, your faith goes down.
Sure.
If you increase your faith, your fear goes down.
Sure.
It's like
a seesaw.
Yeah, it really is. And so the idea is you want your faith as high as possible, because mm-hmm. if you do that, then your fear is non-existent.
Sure.
Question. Have you ever worked really hard for something and then had it taken away? How did you deal with it? This experience was very humbling for me. Hopefully, I will deal with it more gracefully next time. If there is a next time. Really hoping there's not a next time.
I think we all have. I mean, I've got a point in my life, a dark spot in my life that was a kind of a failed business and the economy, and you know, everything just went wrong, and it started off with the actions of some others, and for so many years I held resentment against those people, and I didn't break free from it until I showed up at their house, knocked on the door and said, I forgive you. Hardest thing I've ever done. One of the hardest things I've ever done. Now, that wasn't for them.
Yeah.
That was for me.
Yeah.
Because I think even to this day, those people think, why did I need forgiveness? You know, they see that they didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
That's beside the point.
Mm-hmm.
The point is, if you hold on to whatever it is, if Rhonda would have held on to that, if I would have held on to that, if you would have held on to that, it's going to destroy nobody but you.
Yeah.
And the instant you allow God to do a work in you to where you can forgive and forget, not forget, we shouldn't forget, forgive. You don't want to forget because you don't want to repeat. But the moment you can forgive and release that and truly hand it over to God, then you're free.
Yeah, for sure. You know, sports is the best way to see this. You know, we just watched the Olympics.
Sure.
You know, I've seen several people in the Olympics that they worked their whole lives. Mm-hmm. They finally get to the Olympics and maybe they're throwing the shot put and they don't get a mark mm-hmm. because they foul right. and they're out. They're done. They're nothing.
That quick.
And they were a gold medal threat yeah. and yet they get nothing. And I mean, that's got to be really hard mm-hmm. to deal with. I remember that when I was at Dalton State, we had a basketball team that was the number one team in the country. Mm-hmm. They had worked so hard. I remember those guys were up at 5 a.m. every day practicing. They were in the weight room. They were doing all this work all day long, every day, not to mention all the school and everything that went along with it. And they worked their way to being the best in the country. And they went to the tournament to play the tournament. And then COVID happened and they sent them home and never played that tournament. Mm. Can you imagine the disappointment that those guys had to have, the heartbreak? Yeah. Oh, my goodness. And this can happen with anything, right? But I can't help but think about the book of James, you know, with all of this is trying to get to that point, being like Paul and rejoicing no matter what the situation is, because no matter how bad things are, we still have God. And that's really all we need.
Sure.
Right? Took me a month to see that 25 years worth of work, it wasn't gone. It wasn't that it didn't mean anything.
It prepared you.
Yeah, that's right. Have you ever gone through the five stages of grief? Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Which stage was the most difficult for you? I obviously struggled during the anger stage, although the depression stage lasted a lot longer. You know, I just had this discussion with somebody, not about the five stages, but about how I handle situations. And there's times that I feel guilty about the way that I handle situations. So an example, when my mother died, that's a devastating thing. Mm-hmm. She meant as much to me as anything. And she was gone just in the blink of an eye. She's gone. And there were times that I grieved pretty hard. There were times I cried. There were times where it hurt really bad. And to this day, there's still times I call her name out because, you know, it hurts. But it only hurts for a second. Mm-hmm. And then I'm done with it. It doesn't hurt me as bad as it hurts other people. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but I feel guilty about that sometimes. Because of the five stages of grief, the only one that I deal with really is the anger one. Mm-hmm. I don't have a denial issue ever. Matter of fact, I'd probably do better sometimes if I did at least a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. Bargaining is not, I guess a little bit of that maybe. Depression, I'm over it, you know. And acceptance, yeah, once it's done and gone, once everything's decided, there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
So it's just the anger part. That's the only part that I have issues with.
See, I think mine is bargaining, and I go quickly to acceptance. I think that's maybe one of the places that hopefully I've matured through the years is I don't know that I've ever really done all the five stages, but if something happens to me, my first posture is, how do I get out of this? Or how do I make good out of this? And it's the whole bargaining side of, and then, you know, that's lasting less and less nowadays because I've learned to accept quicker, and move on. But yeah, I would get hung up on things, you know, in my past. And I'm not saying I don't now, but it's a lot less. But something would happen that would trigger these five stages of grief. I would go to the bargaining and I would be, how do I get out of this? How do I make it better? How?
Yeah.
And then I finally get to the point of saying, okay, yeah. I'm over it. So, yeah, I don't know that everybody goes. I don't know what the science says or what psychologists say, but I don't know that everybody goes through the five stages.
Yeah. Or if they do, it's very quick.
Yeah.
It's just a thought and then move on. Yeah. This is why I have a hard time when people, I know this probably doesn't have anything to do with this podcast, but whenever I see people, like somebody goes and they they shoot up a school or something. Mm-hmm. And then you look in their social media and they were angry people. Mm-hmm. And they say, well, we should have seen this coming. We should have done something about it. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. I think this is really something that bothers me, because I think I've been angry enough in my life at times where somebody could think that of me. Mm-hmm. You know, if somebody was going to put people in jail or do something to people for being angry, I could have been in trouble in the past.
Yeah, you can't legislate morality.
No, and you can't expect that just because somebody...
There's always going to be evil.
Yeah.
There was in Paul's day, and there is today, and there will be in the future. That's just one of the facts of life. There will always be evil.
That's right. Do you make time to sit at the feet of Jesus and just be still? I'm very much a doer, so sitting still is difficult for me. This experience taught me the value of taking time to be still and listen for His voice.
You know, I think I've talked about on here before that when I was going through, you know, everything with my prior career, I physically, again, this is how I have to do it, but I physically would go to my church in the middle of the day and sit in the sanctuary in the dark, literally at the foot of the cross that's hanging on the back wall of our church. I physically have to do that from time to time, especially when I'm getting overwhelmed and I feel like I'm heading into needing those five stages of grief. I physically have to make myself do that.
Yeah.
Some people don't. Some people can do it in their bed, like Rhonda was talking about. And I think everybody's different. I think the important thing is that you figure out what it is. What posture do you have to take to put yourself at the foot of the cross? For me, it's literal.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's physical. I'm sorry. It's physical.
Yeah. I've done the same thing. It's for some reason, it seems to depend on the subject matter. Mm-hmm. There are some things where it just doesn't feel like it's enough. Maybe it depends on how much it's digging into you, you mm-hmm. know, how deep it hurts mm-hmm. as to what you do about it. But yeah, yeah. Sometimes it's just going for a run. Sometimes my thoughts on a run is enough to really help me with a situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, how do you get that thorn out of the flesh that you got when you were picking blackberries last summer? Sometimes it's reaching in with a pair of tweezers, and sometimes it's surgery. You know, it depends on how deep it is.
Yeah.
So I think that's your point.
Yep.
Upward Sports Run for God Run Club is the best way to stay motivated for your fitness journey and your faith journey. You get these weekly podcasts, but there is so much more. We have proven training plans available for you, whether you're just at the beginning of your fitness quest or you've been running for 20 years. We have something for everyone, and it doesn't matter where you are with God either. We have something for you there, too. If you're not a member, join today at runforgod.com. It is the best value you will find.
All right, how about a little training debate? What do you think is more important, volume or intensity?
That's a trick question. I obviously I've had the luxury of reading through your notes here, but I don't think there's a good answer to that. I think there's a lot of...
What do you think it depends on?
Your goals. Probably the biggest one. Are you looking to just finish something? Or are you looking to win something?
Yeah. Do you think it matters individually, the person?
Sure. Yeah. There's so many variables there. I'm just sitting here thinking about the people that we've actually coached in the past.
I think about
obviously volume is very important. But volume alone is not going to put you winning the Olympic marathon.
Right.
Intensity is very important, But intensity is not going to put you winning the Olympic marathon.
Yeah.
So I think it's both and. I think when it comes down to which is more important, in that example, they're both equally as important.
Yeah.
But if you're wanting to win that your next regional 5K and it's going to take 17 minutes to win it. Let's just use that as an example. I think intensity is more important. But if you're wanting to complete your very first marathon, then volume's more important.
Yeah.
So I know that's not just one answer because I don't think there is one answer.
Yeah, I think you're right. But I think there's another variable too.
Okay.
And I think it depends on the person. Like, sure. I think there are people who could go out there and just run an easy run every day and be close to their best without a lot of intensity.
You think so?
I do. I know so because I'm one of them. I don't need to do a whole lot of intense stuff. I don't do a lot of intense stuff. But as long as I get some miles in, I'll usually do pretty well.
But so let me challenge that. When Lane paced you at that 5K. What was it? You ran 16-something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to step out on a limb and say you couldn't have done that without any intensity. You had to have intensity.
Nope.
You had to.
Nope. I can go back and look at my logs and see.
You did no track work, no tempo work. All you did was base miles, volume.
I would say so. There could have been a tempo run or two, but that's at the most. I'm telling you, I can do back in 2013, probably my best post 40
mm-hmm.
running year. And that year, the only workout I did was tempo runs. And I did 5 or 6, 7 tempo runs that year. All the hard work I did that entire year, other than races. I raced a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But a race is like a workout.
Sure.
A race is a workout.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So again, I think there's some people, Kaylee Bandy, you remember her? It didn't mm-hmm. seem to matter what you did with her.
Mm-hmm.
Whether she ran hard, she ran, it didn't matter. She still raced the same, no matter what you did with her.
But the argument with her, is she could have been way better than she was.
Maybe.
Had she done...
Maybe. So you're saying
as we prescribed her.
So you're saying I could have been way better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you had a ticket to the world finals triathlon. You said, "Nope, I'm done."
It's complicated.
It is. It's yeah. I don't think if you ever hear anybody out there say one, if they make absolute statements about this, they're wrong.
Yep.
Because it's just so many variables, and I think that's where. You know, if you're looking for a coach or you just got to be careful and listen to people who understand. Not that we understand completely, but we understand a lot.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, I will never compete with Google, you know, in coaching. You know, I've had people that I've coached in the past and they come up and say, well, Google said this. I'm like, well, then go talk to Google.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to compete with that because there is so much information out there nowadays that says this is the best, this is the best, this is the best. And we've said it many times. There's 100 different ways to reach the goal you've got, whatever that goal is, whether it's running a 17-minute 5K or it's running your very first marathon. There are at minimum 100 ways to get there.
Yeah.
The most important thing that you're going to have to do to hit your goal is to pick one and stick with the plan.
Yeah.
It really is that simple in a lot of instances.
With that.
Totally. Yeah, it's complicated. Not much debate here for me.
Well, it's time for Dean's Thoughts. That's the time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Well, I've never been through firefighter training, but I heard somebody talking about it, and it made me think about this. This is called Training Like a Firefighter. When a new firefighter is trained, they begin in the classroom. They spend weeks learning the basics of firefighting, from the organization of a firefighting unit to actually putting the fire out. As is the case with most things we don't understand, it is far more complicated than we know. But after those initial weeks of learning how to minimize the damage a fire can do, as well as keeping safe while doing it, there comes a time to face the fire. They will set up a controlled burn, and the trainee must enter the structure and literally feel the fire's heat for the first time. Once there, it becomes uncomfortable very quickly. Being in a burning building is not natural. At this point, the trainee realizes that talking about it is much different than doing it. There is a palpable fear. But you know you cannot become a firefighter without facing the fire. The first time is tough, but it gets better with each training session. Eventually, it feels natural to be in a place where there is fire, and boom, you're a firefighter. We can find many parallels between running and firefighting training. First, many people sign up for a Couch to 5K plan because it sounds good. Then they go out to run that first time and find out it's a little harder than they thought. Or maybe they knew it would be hard, but it is much different when you have to put action to the desire. The more those people get out and work towards the 5K finish line, though, the easier it becomes. It's a little like facing that fire for the first time. Second, it becomes apparent early that as important as it is to understand how to run, there is no substitute for doing it. For someone who has never faced what it feels like to run for more than a mile, it is impossible to describe in a classroom setting. You have to feel it in order to have a frame of reference or even to discuss it. Once you do it, you can feel the benefits from it. We can talk about how running and or walking can make you healthier, but once you do it, you can feel it. Finally, you find the value in running increases with your accumulated knowledge and experiences. The more you know and experience in firefighting, the better firefighter you become. There are many different types of structures and materials to learn about. There are different strategies for fighting a fire depending on the situation. Learning how to use all of your equipment is important. There's a lot to learn. But the more a firefighter learns, the better a firefighter they become. The same thing applies to our fitness journey. The more we understand about our body, how to fuel it properly, the importance of rest, and all the different types of training, and how it all comes together to improve our fitness, the better runner we can be. But more importantly, the more we can enjoy what we do. Facing a real fire as a firefighter is scary, but it is also exhilarating. Most firefighters do not like having to fight a fire, but they live for it anyway. We can say the same thing about running. It's scary to embark on the training to run a marathon. It's even scarier to step to that starting line, but it is exhilarating too. Although we don't want to put our body through all of that, we do want to do it at the same time. I have met a fair number of people in my life who are simply scared of God. Not the sense that God is going to strike them down or something, but because they think they're going to lose some freedom by having to live by some new set of rules. I get it. Change is hard, no matter what it is. But the freedom that Jesus talked about in Luke 4:18 is different than the traditional view of freedom. Jesus talks about setting us free from the bondage of sin. It is not a freedom to do what we want to do, but a freedom to do what we ought to do. I've lived under both definitions of freedom, and the one Jesus offers is 10 times better. But you have to experience it to understand just how spectacular it is. There are a lot of similarities between firefighter training and training for a marathon, and there are many similarities with both of those and following Jesus too. You have to experience them to fully understand them, and if you will embrace the fear of taking them on, you will be glad you did.
That's a great story, Dean.
I think firefighters are adrenaline junkies, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
That you kind of have to be.
Yeah.
To do that kind of a job. And that whole idea of being scared is part of the enjoyment, I think, mm-hmm. of it. It's like going to a haunted house. You know, when you go to a haunted house, we go to a haunted house to be scared. Mm-hmm. Now, does that make any sense at all?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a healthy fear, too. And that sounds so counter-scriptural because the Bible says 365 times, do not fear. I guess it's a different fear because, I used to ride bulls.
Same thing, yeah.
And they used to say that the minute you become not fearful of doing that, you better quit. And I would say they say the same thing to firefighters.
Yeah.
That the moment you become numb to going into a burning building, you need to hang it up, because that's about the time you're going to do something dumb or wrong mm-hmm. or be overconfident. Because a healthy level of fear on some things is just a respect. I respected what those bulls could do. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not really fear. It's more of a respect. But yeah. It is fear. Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
If I don't want an overly confident and cocky firefighter.
Yeah.
Coming to put out my burning house for his sake. Not necessarily for my burning house, but for his sake. Because that's when you get overconfidence, when you just start to go off the rails.
But that fear as a bull rider, mm-hmm. the fear doesn't go away, mm-hmm. but it gets different, doesn't it? The more you do it. The first time you do it is terrifying, I'm sure. But doesn't it get...
For me, it never did.
Did it never change?
I mean, you learn to deal with it.
When
they're pulling on
us.
That bull rope and you're physically tying your hand to a 2,000-pound tornado, I don't know many guys that ever get excited about it in that moment. They may say they do, but it's terrifying.
Yeah.
Maybe there have been. That's what I'm saying is, if you ever get to the point where that fear is not there, you need to get out of the sport.
Yeah,
because you're going to get hurt.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that fear is good when we step to the starting line of a marathon too. Little different. It's a whole different kind of fear. You're not worried about necessarily getting hurt, but you're worried about what's coming.
But what it produces is the same.
Yeah,
I mean, the adrenaline, dopamine, all those shots to the brain. I think that was the same. Not necessarily on the starting line, but approaching the finish line.
Yeah.
That what is the feeling you get? You kind of euphoric.
Yeah.
I think that's the same.
Yeah.
The adrenaline rush is.
Yeah.
You hear the term runner's high. Well, you get the same thing when they're tying you to the back of a bull.
Yeah.
Or running into a burning building. It's that. It can be addictive.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. That's interesting. Very interesting. The one thing about knowledge and understanding, this is one of the things that bothers me today about the world today, is we don't seem to be concerned about knowledge anymore. We want to Google something, see how to do it, and then go do it and be done with it, and that's mm-hmm. it. The kids on cross-country teams. I remember back when I was running in high school, for example, when the Olympics were on, that's what we talked about. When we went to practice, we were talking about what happened in mm-hmm. yesterday's events, mm-hmm. Because that's what we were into. Mm-hmm. These kids today, they don't know who Galen Rupp is.
Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
I mean, they don't want to know. Mm-hmm. They don't have any interest in understanding the sport better, and that bothers me a little bit. I wish we'd do better with that. I don't know how you do that, but I think it's because today, this is why I think it is. Back then, you only had you didn't have near as much stimulus as you mm-hmm. do today. We didn't have phones mm-hmm. to worry about. We didn't even have video games back then. So we live in this headline society now. Where, I mean, I'm guilty, right? Mm-hmm. When I want to see what the news is, what do? I skim through some news aggregator and I see the headlines and I mm-hmm. read the headlines. If one catches my eye, I might dig into it. But even then, I probably only read two or three paragraphs most mm-hmm. of the time, right? We just don't get into anything to get a deep enough knowledge for things these days.
You know, I'm funny, and I just did this last night. It's funny you're bringing this up, but, talking about kids these days, they just want a quick answer. And I'm notorious for not giving that, especially to my kids. We've talked about the story with Landon when he was 10, and I brought a garage door opener. I laid it in the floor, and I said, put this up. No other instruction than that. Just you and Jack. And they could do it at the time, but they installed a new garage door opener. Well, just last night, Lane is going to start doing some mowing down the road here. This fall, his internship is done, and he's wanting to do some things while he's in school. And he was talking about changing the blades in the lawnmower. And he starts asking me, and when kids ask you these days, it's asking to get to the point where you'll do it for them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I could see the angle, and he was asking me, so how do you change the lawnmower blades? And I could see that it was, you need to change the lawnmower blades. And I said, figure it out. And he was like dumbfounded, like, seriously? I said, yeah, figure it out.
Yeah.
Just go get them changed. And because I convinced every young man needs to know how to change lawnmower blades, don't you?
I totally agree.
Change a tire. All the,
totally agree.
And I'm not one of those that will just go do it. Now, I probably do that to a fault, looking back on my kids' childhoods. Yeah, I don't give them the, I say figure it out.
But your kids probably like to try to figure stuff out too, because that's
Landon
the way
does.
Are.
Lane hates it.
Yeah, well, you probably, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Landon would have never asked how to change the lawnmower blades.
Yeah,
he would have just figured it out
and done it. Yeah.
Lane's like, is there a YouTube video or can you just do that for me? Or,
yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. Landon will definitely cut his own grass when he is older.
Absolutely.
And Lane will probably pay somebody to cut his.
Yeah. Yeah.
At Upward Sports and Run for God, we're all about helping you on your fitness journey. But we also want to support you on your faith journey as well. Sign up today for the self-paced Bible in a Year Challenge and listen every day as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. As a bonus, I also give you running and walking tips of the day and finish with a different encouraging quote in each episode. You must be a Run Club member to participate in this exciting and edifying challenge. Sign up and start listening today.
Every week, I share a reason why running is so awesome. And this is this week. It makes watching the Olympics that much better. You know, we may not be running as fast as those guys and those ladies that are out there on the track, but at least we know that what they do is hard. And we know a little bit about what it feels like to do what they do, to push themselves to their limit.
But I said this again this year. I said this last time around because there was... What race was it? It was the 400 or the 800. There was one guy in the race. You're like, how did he make it to the Olympics? He was so far behind each other.
Well, do you know what they do, don't you? No. They have these provisional spots. I'm going to talk about that in a story here in a little bit.
Well, I've always said that in the Olympics, they need a Joe Blow out there running. Because when they're all running...
But take that Joe Blow and watch and see how fast they run. Like, there was a guy in the 800.
No. I'm saying they need me out there in the 800 because you have no frame in the marathon when they're all running 4:30 pace.
Yeah.
It's not impressive.
I know.
Because everybody's...
It looks so easy.
But if you saw them passing me out there running, you'd be like, whoa, that's insane.
That is true.
But you have nothing, no frame of reference. And that's why... I think every race needs to have Mitchell out there running, because then you could say Mitchell was a pretty fast guy in his day, but it's like he's sitting still.
It's true.
You know?
Yeah. Cause even some of those provisional people, like this morning I was watching, there were 800 meter repechage rounds. So these are all the people that didn't make it through, and they're getting a one last chance. And there was one guy that finished like, way after.
Was he in a
else.
White kit?
I don't remember.
This guy was in a white kit. I can't remember what country it was, but he was like, and it was a fairly short race, maybe 800 or 400. And it was like, how? But I say that, and he was still only like 5 seconds off, which would be 30 seconds faster than me. You
know? That's what I was going to say. This guy that looked like he was an also ran, and he was really, really slow, ran like 155 for the 800.
Yeah, he smoked everybody in the southeast of the United States.
Good stuff. Well, we already talked about the 1500 meters. There were two other races. If you didn't catch the 400 meters, Quincy Hall was in fifth place with 100 meters to go. Fifth. And he won the gold medal. He looked so ugly finishing. Like, I just don't know that you can look like you're running any harder than Quincy was running. He ran the fourth fastest time ever. I mean, he ran fast. The guy that he beat, Matthew Hudson Smith, was, I mean, it looked like he had it.
Yeah.
And, man, he came back. It was amazing. Great. If you haven't seen it, go back and watch it. And then my favorite was a steeplechase, Kenneth Rooks. Kenneth Rooks, when you look at him, he looks like somebody that would be in your church.
Yeah.
Just a nice, clean-cut guy who just, he looks, you know, like an altar boy. Mm-hmm. White, you know, a little whiter skin than a typical runner. Looks like a nerd. He goes to BYU, mm-hmm. Or did go to BYU. And just doesn't look like much. Well, he was ranked 15th out of 16 in the steeplechase. And so it's like, well, I thought he could finish higher than that. You know, I thought he would finish higher than that. And in the middle, at the very, like, three laps in, he's in dead last place. And I'm thinking, oh, well, I thought maybe he had more than that. And then you notice a couple laps later, he's moved up a little bit. And then the next thing you know, he's right in the thick of things. And then going into the last lap, the guy takes the lead. I mean, runs into the lead. And I'm like, look at Rooks. I mean, I'm getting fired up. I'm getting so excited watching him go. And he starts to open up a gap. And I'm like, what is going on? I'm living in the Twilight Zone. And this guy, and then all of a sudden, El Bakkali, the defending champion and the guy who hasn't lost in years, he realizes, wait a minute. This is for real. I need to get on it. And so he takes off. Well, Lameka Gurma, who is the world record holder, latched on to El Bakkali, and they start running up towards Rooks. Well, as they're running up towards Rooks, Gurma just put on this unbelievably hard surge, and he's trying to pass El Bakkali before he passes Rooks. And he hits a hurdle and goes down so hard. I've never seen anybody land so hard off a hurdle. He hit the hurdle with his trailing knee, and it spun his body around. He landed flat on his back, and his head hit. It knocked him out completely cold. They had to take him off in a stretcher.
Dean, I'm going to say something.
What?
I'm going to cut you off. I think you missed your calling.
I know, right?
I'm sitting here. You know what's going through my head?
What?
Because for everybody out there listening, Dean didn't look at one single note the whole time he was saying everything he just said, which was a word salad in my head. You're the Larry Munson of track and field.
Oh, no, not Larry Munson. No.
Go Dogs.
Oh, no.
But it's infectious watching how excited you are about these races.
Well, this race was exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Kenneth Rooks, he goes into that last water jump. He's still in the lead. He comes off the water jump in the lead, and they get to that last barrier. Just before the last barrier, Bakkali passes him. And then there's a Kenyan guy, I can't remember his name now. He comes up, and it looks like he's going to pass him. And Rooks comes off that last jump, and he just digs down just that much deeper. And just like Quincy, he just looked ugly doing it. Just got everything he had into it. And you thought, well, the Kenyan's going to pass him.
Yeah.
He held him off. He was gaining on Bakkali. It was the most heroic effort I've seen on a track, maybe ever. That's awesome. Kenneth Rooks, he's my hero. So there you go. That's the update from the Olympics. And I don't know if you saw Julian Alfred won the 100 meters. Women, and I love her story. So I found this, and this is from Yahoo Sports. It says Julian Alfred awoke at 5 a.m. on the morning of the Olympic 100 meter final, feeling like she needed some extra inspiration. The Saint Lucia sprinter opened her journal and wrote the words, "Julian Alfred, Olympic champion." She also pulled up videos of some of Usain Bolt's Olympic victories. She goes through and you know, a few hours later, of course, she wins the Olympic 100 meters. This lady who's from St. Lucia, who used to run around barefoot, it's just an inspiring story.
First medal ever for St. Lucia.
Mm-hmm. ever for St. Lucia. Of course, she comes back later and
wins something else.
Wins silver yeah. in the 200. But, I mean, just a neat story about she just kind of, you know, she loved Usain Bolt and she just wanted to be like Usain Bolt. And, you know, it says Alfred's victory is the culmination of a journey that she began in St. Lucia's capital city, Castries. I don't know if that's how you say that or not. With her running barefoot in her school uniform. She eventually secured the attention of her school teachers when she began beating the boys in her first and second grade classes. With tears welling up in her eyes Saturday night, Alfred described the heartbreak of her beloved father's death when she was 12. For months, she quit running after he passed, unable to bear the thought of doing their shared passion by herself. He'd always be so boastful of his daughter being a future Olympian, Alfred said. And of course, eventually she got back to it. She goes to the University of Texas. She wins two NCAA titles. She didn't medal in the world championships, and she thought, oh, man, this is, you know, it's over. I'm not as good as I thought I was. I really don't have any hope. And she gets this coach who just kind of breathes life back into her and makes her believe in herself again. Now she's Olympic champion. So really, really cool story.
You want to hear a crazy coincidence?
What's that?
So we just did Rhonda's story, right? So I just got an email from Rhonda, like literally as we're sitting here. And she's already emailed us once about the crayons that we talked about.
Yep.
Was that a couple weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
And she just emailed again talking about the five crayons. She thinks it's hilarious that I've never heard of Dire Straits. This is the second time she said that. I don't... Most people haven't heard of Dire Straits.
That's not true. Not true. Money for Nothing. Everybody's heard the song Money for
Nothing.
But
she says, I'm still thinking about the five crayons. I hope this is okay that I read this. I'm sure it is. Such an interesting subject. I've been researching and found that David Jeremiah has a good article on it. I saw a metal display hanger that said, always earned, never given. And it made me think of the crayons. While salvation is a gift, the crayons must be earned. I guess we could use the five crayons as an outline for how to live a Christian life. Earning a crown can be viewed as the same as earning a PR or placing in your age group. It doesn't happen without planning, dedication, and hard work. The reward of a crown sounds better to me than a race medal. Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rhonda.
That's good stuff.
She led it off with saying, hey there, country boy. Do I really sound that redneck on these podcasts?
Well, this last story... No, not that bad. Not that bad. You can tell where you're from, though. That's you can right. tell where you're from.
Yeah.
I do have this one last story that I wanted to share. You know, you mentioned the people that are way back. They have these universality spots, they call them, right? And they're awarded to these small countries who they don't have anybody who qualifies for an Olympic event. So they give away these spots so those countries can be part of the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And it's a neat thing. So the Solomon Islands were offered a men's and women's 100-meter spot. And so for the women, the spot went to a lady by the name of Sharon Firasua. Who is Sharon Firasua, you say? Well, Sharon Firasua finished 72nd in the last Olympics in a different event, the marathon. So this lady... She tried to qualify to get to the back to the marathon, and she didn't qualify, and so they gave her this 100-meter spot. So this lady has now competed in the Olympics in the marathon and the 100 meters. She has got to be the only person ever that has ever done that. That's pretty awesome, don't you think?
For sure.
That's a cool story. Last question, trivia question, and this is our last Olympic question. The USA has won three times as many medals as the next highest nation. That's crazy, huh? Over the year. And I'm talking about over the years. That's probably even more than that, this Olympics. But there are some events we have never won a medal in. Name one of those events.
Hmm.
If you're the first one to send that to dean@runforgod.com, and you are a member of Run Club, you will win $20 off in the Run for God store.
So there are multiple answers. I've got a trivia question for you to put you on the spot.
Oh, man.
And I'm going to butcher this, so it's not going to be exactly, the statistic is not going to be exactly how I say it, but you're going to get the gist. So I heard a stat the other day that said that there is a non-nation entity that if you put it in the medal count, that it would have, like in the last Olympics, it would have been like number 6 or 7. And you know how they rank them, the nations, by medal counts?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this entity is not a nation, but it's an entity. And it would have been one of the top medal counts. What is that non-nation entity?
Well, they've got that that refugee team. You're not talking about the
nope.
refugee team.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. Na, na, dun, 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 dun. It's the University of Georgia.
Oh.
Go Dogs.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's in the top 10. If you would have took the University of Georgia, graduates from the University of Georgia, and put them as a nation, they would have been in the top 10 in the last Olympics.
That's crazy, isn't it? No, it's pretty good. Yeah. Well, there's other colleges too that have a bunch.
Really?
Too. Oh, yeah. Stanford usually has a bunch.
Well, they said the Olympics before that, I think it was the University of Florida.
Okay. Yeah, Florida. Yeah. But are you talking about just track and field, or are you talking
just
about
all medal counts?
All medal counts.
Yeah. So, yeah. Because of swimming, I mean, they do have some track.
They've got good swimmers, good runners.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. A little bit of everything. Yeah.
I just thought that was a really cool.
That is a cool
stat. I never thought about that. So,
that's a cool stat. Yeah. All right. You get that for free.
Free 93.
Our motivational thought of the week is this: working hard for something we don't care about is called stress. Working hard for something we love is called passion.
That's a very good quote.
Yeah, that comes from Simon Sinek, an author and a speaker. He's the one that wrote that book
right there.
Yeah,
Infinite
that's right.
Game, yeah.
That's right, yeah. Yeah. And, I think about that from a running perspective, obviously, but from a spiritual perspective, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think about the more that you... It's amazing how much better things are when you just have that really close relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
Makes all the difference. All right. Well, if you're listening to this podcast, you know that we have this podcast available in video form on YouTube, right? And if you normally watch it on YouTube, know that it is available as a podcast as well. And you can do either one. The videos, if you're not a Run Club member, those videos are only available weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Run Club member, you get them right away.
So what you've heard us talking about, the church model is coming back this January. We're saying this on every podcast, but I have started to reach out and talk to people who have already expressed interest in teaching a class this January. You know, we've put a goal of 100.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's you, I want to talk to you. So shoot an email to customerservice@runforgod.com and said, "Hey, Mitchell said on the podcast, if I want to teach a class, he wants to talk to me." And I will reach out to you. I'm setting up Zoom calls, and I want to talk to everybody individually or in some small groups about what we've got coming up this January. So if you are interested in that, shoot an email to customerservice@runforgod.com. Holly or Gay will get that to me, and I'll set up a meeting, and we'll talk about what's coming this fall, and more importantly, what's going to happen the first week of January.
I dare you to do it. Until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about the Run for God ministry, go to runforgod.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There's nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.